So I missed a couple of weeks, but we're now on page 238, and the Sefer is describing sometimes there are statements that could be said that, generally speaking, it could be viewed negative, but there's also an interpretation that could be viewed in a positive way. So that's usur, because generally speaking, it's a negative. I could say a statement that's ambiguous, that's two interpretations, but since more likely or most likely it will be understood as negative, that would be usur. Now, he gives a few examples when saying such a statement that, given the circumstances, we'll go through them, it will make it clear that it's being said in a positive way, even though most would interpret it as a negative way in a vacuum, but given the certain circumstances, it will certainly tilt it towards being positive, and that would be permitted. So he says as follows: person uses his tone of voice or facial expressions or body language or anything like that that makes it clear it's being said in a positive way. He tips the scale in a positive way, so then that would be certainly a situation where it would be permitted. Another example where you could interpret something negative into a positive way is, let's say the person about whom I'm talking is in front of me, and I wouldn't want to insult him in front of me. So I wouldn't say this thing in front of him in such a way. I'm not that mean of a person. So by virtue of the fact that it's said in front of this person, about this person, it must therefore be done in a positive way. Now, that's only if I'd be embarrassed to speak this way in front of a person. And sometimes you say something, the guy walks in the room, you get embarrassed, I said it. But had he been here, I certainly wouldn't say that. So when I say such a statement that's clear that I would be embarrassed to say it in a negative way, and my intention was positive, that would also be allowed. Now, we're speaking very theoretical and abstract, but we'll give some examples at the end of this chapter. Even if he's not present, if I want to assess the situation, would I say this had he been present? Then that would also indicate I'm saying it in a positive way. Would I say the same topic, the same words, in the same way if he were here? If the answer is yes, I wouldn't be embarrassed. That would also indicate that it's positive. Now, this is a tool I mentioned in the past in general when it comes to using a person's imagination and fashion and fantasy, that we're all over in Lashon Hara. I'm not accusing of anything, but this is the Gemara says it happens all the time. It's just the nature of human beings, and we try to overcome it. But we know we'd be more careful if Tzadik was in the room with us, or Moshe Feinstein was present. We know that we'd most likely not speak Lashon Hara.
So I probably couldn't talk
at all. Yeah, but whatever the measure is. So just like, you know, if you had, that person was in the room, you wouldn't say that in front of him. Take it a step level, higher. If Moshe Feinstein was in the room, would you say that? And the answer would be you wouldn't say that, then you probably shouldn't be saying it. But that's also a good litmus test. It says if it's said in front of three people, that too would indicate you're saying it in a positive way. Meaning if I'm saying a statement in front of three people, and the person about I'm speaking about is not present, but when three people hear about it, there's a cloud that word will get out that he will hear about it. So in essence, it's like me speaking in front of that person. So if I would be embarrassed to say the statement in front of the person, if I'd be comfortable saying in front of the person, that means what I'm saying is in a positive way. So these are a number of indicators. And again, it's still very abstract, but still some guidelines to work with. Now, what are some examples here? So he says, the Gemara itself says, Nur be planya, which means there's a fire in the house. So a person asks, where do I find a fire? I need to light a fire. I need to light a candle. So they say, oh, light in his house. The fire is always, but he's always cooking in his house. What does it mean he's always cooking? I mean, he's like a glutton. He's always eating. He's fat, overweight. Or does it mean he's always serving guests? The guy's the oven's full. He's always baking cookies and cake and whatnot. He's serving. So that could be viewed in two different ways. So depending on the context, the body language, the inflection, the tone, all of that, the circumstances would indicate whether I'm saying this, he's a glutton, or I'm saying he's a machnes orachim. So that's just an example that the Gemara itself uses. This next example he brings, I don't like the example. I'm not speaking bad about the book, Chas V'Shalom, but I don't know if it works with our way we use it. Now, if you describe a person as talkative, often that sounds negative to me. Now, a person could be a good conversationalist. That's a positive way to say it. To say talkative, it seems like excess. He talks too much. So he uses this as an example. Talkative sometimes could be he talks too much, or means he's very he's a good conversationalist. I think the word talkative itself has derogatory implication to it, but that's another example of something maybe that could be interpreted in two ways, which might be dependent on the circumstances. Now, this is a very difficult one. emails and texts he talks about. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but we know things can be misinterpreted oftentimes through emails and often even more by text because that's done quick with your thumbs. You might have missed that something. You didn't have time. You wanted to get it out before Marv. Whatever it was, you were rushing when you were writing the text. So one has to be very, very, very careful when sending text messages and emails and the sort that's said in the proper way, that's not misinterpreted, using the right exclamation points, like in a text. If there's a difference between like an exclamation point and no exclamation point. That could change from a positive or a negative. Or like a little smiley face afterwards could change the whole tone of your text message.
Or a K in 2 K's.
What?
Or a K in 2 K's.
What does that mean?
Oh, that is way too...
If you write K or KK...
What's KK?
For OK.
Like OK.
What's the difference?
If you write 2 K's, they say that for 1 K, it's like more like aggressive.
K is
a single K is like more aggressive.
I'm not holding by this. I'm
KK
not sure.
Is more like confirmed, like okay. More friendly.
I thought people just pressed
it,
the K extra. I didn't realize there was an interpretation to it.
I think it's on purpose.
You learned this in class?
No, I mean,
that's so
there's
funny.
There's also articles about it.
I'm new here. I remember a friend of mine. He's older than me, but 20 years older than me. So when like WhatsApp became like somewhat normal, and Rav Weinberger would use WhatsApp, so he'd always like respond to this person, and afterwards write YK, and the recipient thought Yom Kippur. Why is he always telling me Yom Kippur? Like, how bad am I? It's like it's now the middle of Shvat. He's telling me Yom Kippur. It took him a while to realize YK stood for Yashikach. So that was Weinberger's Rashi tables that he used apparently. But yeah, KK is, I thought people just pressed the K an extra time. Okay, either way. Now this is another very important thing. You know, it's important, the Gemara talks about not speaking praises about a person. Look, when you start to praise how great Reuven is, so then someone would say, yeah, he's really great, but you know, he's not that great. You know, that leads to like, he also has this deficiency and he's at chisaron. So the Gemara says not even to speak positive about a person because that might lead to negative speaking. Now, some explain, and that he uses this seems to be what he's most comfortable with, it's only talking about when you speak in front of a person who dislikes him. Meaning, let's say I know Reuven doesn't like Shimon. I like Shimon. I'd say Reuven, Shimon, oh, he's an incredible person, he's a Baal Midos, he's a Machnes Orachim, he does everything. So now, in general, it's okay to do that. But in front of Reuven who doesn't like him, Reuven's going to say, no, he's not. So you'd be careful in front of whom you're praising. If you're praising in front of a room of people who are nice and like this guy, that's allowed. But once it's in front of a person who doesn't like him, so then that would be a problem. He gives an example talking about competitors in a business. You know, you're talking about in front of one craftsman how good this craftsman is, that electrician how good this electrician is. There's a lot of jealousy in competitors, so you shouldn't speak about that in front of that person because it's going to have him speak bad about him.
At a Shiloh. Yeah. Yesterday, I was in a doctor's office,
mm-hmm.
and I had seen a different doctor in the past about this thing. They're both doctors were Jewish, and the previous doctor had recommended a certain treatment, and this doctor mentioned that treatment, and I said, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do that. You know, when I did it in the past with a different allergist, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do that because, like, I thought it was too expensive. So he asked me straight up, like, who would you do it with? That's what I told him. I caught me out a little bit of guard. He said it could be that person uses this company where it's more expensive, but like I use a different company that's less expensive. Was that an okay response, or should I have said like I prefer not to say?
It's a very good question. My sense of just as it relates to doctors, my experience has been doctors oftentimes get along with each other. They refer to each other. My father's a doctor. I would love to ask him what his thoughts are on if that my assessment's correct. But my sense is they really work with each other. They consult with people in their same industry. It's not viewed as so much competition. Doctors, Baruch Hashem, oftentimes they do well, you know, as opposed to electricians and plumbers, I'd say. They're still, each client makes more of a difference, maybe. I wonder if that's why there's more tension. I'm just really off-the-cuff assessment of doctors versus other industries. So I would think by doctors might be okay, but I wouldn't want to ask further on that. I think it would be okay by doctors. That's really my sense. That reminds me, we had this barber come to our house. It's called Moshe the barber. Come to the house, give the haircuts. It's easier. We stay in the house, takes care of us, all the kids, boom, boom, boom. We stopped using it for a few months, and the haircuts weren't so good. So then he came back. We had to like invite him to come back. It was a little awkward. And he was like trying to find out who gave the haircuts because he didn't like how the haircuts were done. So I wasn't telling him. I didn't say who did it. So then my youngest son, so he was, he asked him, so who gave you a haircut? Oh, my father gave me the haircut. I gave the haircut. So he threw me under the bus on that one.
It's
right, yeah. How much MS? Lashon Hara. Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Now, this is a very great Ha'ara he has here. He says, he calls into question now this concept of not speaking praise in front of other people and who might dislike him. You have to be very careful. So I know everyone here doesn't, everyone likes Reuven. I could speak about Reuven. Now, what about praising someone in public? He writes, it's very possible that one of the listeners dislikes the one being praised. The speaker knows that nobody in the audience dislikes the one being praised, so he's speaking about Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's not a shiloh. You're allowed to speak about Rav Moshe Feinstein. But how do you know? So in light of this, the prevalent practice of saying words of praise during public speeches needs justification. It's rare to make a definitive assessment that there's nobody in the audience who dislikes the subject of praise. Hence, such praises seem to be forbidden. Fascinating. I always wondered for many, many years, Rav Schechter, when he gets introduced, he gets all these nice praises. He never says, thank you so much for the host, and you know this person's doing great things. He just goes right into it, like boom, 1, 2, 3. I always wondered. After reading this, I'm wondering if he doesn't maybe praise anyone or thank anyone because of this. Maybe there's someone in the shul doesn't like the Rav or something. That's a fun thing. I don't know. That's a thought. He just goes right into it and like as if nothing was said about him, completely ignores it, doesn't acknowledge anyone. So just a thought. I never asked him, but I think it might be just his personality. Maybe this is the halachic explanation. So he says...
Even in a big crowd of like... Moshe Feinstein, there still might be like that one person that just in general just doesn't like, you know, rabbis. He said something about Kollel.
Yeah, could be, you're right. Now, some contemporary posts can offer a dispensation to speak about a guest of honor at a public event. In this case, when the honoree accepted honor, he implicitly gave his consent to be praised. He knows he's going to be praised. He's mochel. If anyone speaks Lashon Hara, he's mochel, and he understands that. And therefore, there seems to be some limud chus on this very prevalent custom. He says, in light of this as well, putting information on the internet, too, you know, you're subject to who could read the praises, and that certainly is open to a much wider audience and might lead to Lashon Hara as well. So one has to be very, very careful about these types of public forms of praise. And two last things. I didn't go all the way to 58. I apologize. But he says, effusive praise, excessive praise about someone is also very bad to do. Embellishing, aside from perhaps being not correct and not true and sheker, but if it's overdone, if it's repetitive, even if it's all true, someone might get so annoyed by it and say he's not that great. You know, listen, he's done great things, but you're like saying he's like the, you know, God's gift to the universe. So that also, if it's too much, it might register some and generate some Lashon Hara in response. And the flip side, just like excessive praise is bad, omission is also bad. By you missing something out, you don't want to give credit to the person, like it's by, you know, the guy, I don't know, built a beautiful mikveh, let's say, and he was so proud of all like the, I don't know, the tile work he did, and he was talking to everybody, and I get up there and I say thank you so much for him, he did a great job on the mikveh, and I dafka don't mention the tiles he was so proud of. That might be indicative of me saying the tiles were really done poorly. I'm not sure if that was a good example, but either way, you know, theoretically sometimes omitting something could imply a certain level of Lashon Hara.
So a person's like talking about shidduch or whatever. Someone mentions like, you know, he's talking about the bacher.